about it. She's going to tell you about some of these books right now. Make welcome Diane Dagman.
Yes. Thank you, Sherwin, for inviting me to come here today and talk about my Ferrinand biology. It's a great opportunity, and I'm happy to share some of the stories. I first met Ferrin when I was in college at Augustana in 1970. I went to the monthly Grand Ole Opry shows they had there at Matt Eagle, sponsored at the Coliseum downtown in Sioux Falls. And I went there on St. Patrick's Day in 1970. Ferrin Young was the headliner, and I hung around after the show and talked to his band members. And back in those days, I didn't have any money. I walked wherever I went or took the bus. And I was planning to walk back to Augustana after the show that night. And Ferrin found out about that and said, "No, you're not." So he put me in his bus, and they took me back to the Brooks Soccer Hall and in the tour bus, and the driver pulls up and shines a spotlight on the dorm, so I wake everybody up, and then I get on the bus. So that was a rather memorable experience. And after I graduated from college, I joined the Navy, and every time I would be in place close, or Ferrin came any place close to where I was, and then I would go see him. And especially after I got commissioned, he'd see me standing down there in front of the stage, and he'd give me a salute. So the last time I talked to him was in August 1994. I was on my way over to Japan. I just got orders to go there, and I told him on the phone that I would have liked to have stayed where I was at my current duty station in Washington, D.C. I was enjoying it there. I said, but if the Navy's going to promote me to a captain, well, then I'll go where the Navy needs me. And he said, "Well, isn't that just like the military? You tell them you like where you're at, you tell them you want to stay where you are, and they ship your ass to Japan." I hadn't been in Japan very long. This was August, and it was December. I was listening to Armed Forces Radio one evening, and I heard the news flash on the radio that country music singer Ferrin Young had shot himself, and he attempted suicide. And I listened to the news, but there wasn't much news over there, and I did find out that he had died 24 hours later. When I came back to the United States and went over to Los Angeles in 1999, it seemed like he was being forgotten. And about that time, I was thinking about writing as a retirement career. I was in the process of publishing my two memoirs that I talked about this morning, A Farm in the Heights with a Navy Green Shirt, and I thought, how great would it be to write the biography of Ferrin Young and to meet all these singers that I had grown up listening to, and I had an excuse to meet them. And everybody who knew Ferrin had stories to tell about him, of course, because he was such a character. So I decided that was what I wanted to do, but I didn't know how to write a biography. I didn't have any contacts in the publishing business. I didn't know anybody in the music business. But one weekend, I got a plane ticket and went to Nashville, and I thought, well, I'll just get started. So I looked up Ralph Emery, and he was gracious enough to meet with me, and I told him I wanted to write Ferrin's biography, and he gave me some advice and some ideas, and I just started working on it from there. I didn't want people to be bugging me all the time about, when's the book going to be published? Is it out yet? So I thought, well, I'll pick 2007. That seemed far enough in the future that I wouldn't be getting all these questions, and also that would be the 75th anniversary of his birth, so I thought that would be far enough out there that maybe I could get the book done by then. And also, I thought I would like to put together a country deputy's band and for the book release party and have a show with some of Ferrin's friends singing at that time. And I didn't know who his band members were. I didn't know any how to get in touch with him, but I just started working on the book. I started making phone calls. I probably made 1,000 phone call attempts over the years, and I ended up doing 120 interviews. And we had the book release party for Look Out, Love Hard, The Fairly Young Story, in Nashville at the MSR Record Shop in November 2007. And we had a country deputy reunion where his band members, 30 years worth of band members, got together. Daryl Hall, Daryl McCall, front of the show. And he's been with Farron in the early 60s and up through the band members who were with Farron when he finished touring in 1993. So some of them had never met before that evening, but they all got together and played his music, and it was a great time. 8 years after I come up with this idea that I wanted to make it happen, but I had no clue how it was going to, but it did, so it turned out really well. At first, when I started contacting people, and I had no credibility, they had no reason to believe that I could really write a book, because I hadn't actually published my first two yet. So I used my Navy captainness for credibility, and I hoped that people would think that someone's been around long enough to get promoted to Navy captain, and I was at the time on active duty. I was in command of an organization in Los Angeles, and I hoped that people would think I was trustworthy enough that they'd be willing to talk to me. But I was surprised at how cooperative and friendly everybody was. Many people would say, oh, we're so glad you're doing this, and Farron really does need to have his story told, and we're looking forward to it. And of course, once I got into it, then I was committed, because I told these people I was going to publish this biography, so I had to do it. So, and Ralph Emery did help me along the way. He gave me access to the interviews that he had done with Farron on his Ralph Emery radio show, and something like 30 hours or something of interviews that helped. And I got in touch with Hilda Young's divorce lawyer, and he got for me the entire transcript of their divorce trial. So when I talked to Hilda and the kids, I didn't have to ask them about all the nasty stuff that went on living with Farron, because there was enough in the transcript that I could quote from that and give the idea of how difficult things were for them sometimes living with the abusive alcoholic that Farron was. And I talked to Dallas, and I had to show his bad side, but I also wanted to show just what a great guy he could be, and why so many people admired him and loved him in spite of his dark side. So I worked to balance that, and most people, even the ones who saw his bad side, also saw his good side, and they appreciated him. And at one time while I was writing about it, doing my early research, I got an email from my little brother Ron, and he told me that he had had a dream that he and Farron were on his cruise together on the way to Hawaii, and they were sitting on the deck chairs on this cruise ship, and they were talking about some singer, and neither one of them could think of who it was. And Ron said, well, I'll call my sister Diane, she'll know. So he called me in the dream, and I answered his questions, and he told Farron, yeah, that's the right person. And Ron said, oh, by the way, she's writing your biography. And Farron said, I know that. And I took that as Farron's approval, that he knew I was writing his biography, and he appreciated it. So, and Ron told me that the one thing that stood out in the dream was that Farron was wearing this blue suit. And I said, you mean he was sitting up on the deck chair in a pink suit? And Ron said, yeah. And I said, did you know that blue is Farron's favorite color? And Ron said, well, no, he had no idea that. But it was the thing that stuck out. That it seemed like a sign that Farron wanted to be right in biography. And one of the band members initially told me that he didn't want to talk to me. He wanted to keep his this member feels very private, and I said, okay, well, I respect that, and one of the few people, by the way, who wasn't willing to tell their stories about Karen and their relationship with him, and at a couple years later then, I called him, and I said, I wanted to ask a question about some specific facts, you know, I wasn't trying to interview him, and by that time he was ready. So he told me all kinds of stories about Karen, and it really made me feel better. He was a great help. And one of the things that he said was that Karen had, Cody was telling Karen that he needed to get right with the Lord, because he was on his way to the wrong place. Karen said, he says, don't worry about that. I'll have time. He'll give me time. And when Karen shot himself, it was 24 hours before he died. So I put in the book, I said, the Lord did in 24 hours. And when the manuscript went in, I went to the copy editor, then the copy editor wanted to change it to say something like, Karen was there in 24 hours, and I said, no, it has to say, the Lord did in 24 hours, and so the book was published that way. They didn't argue with me. There were some things that they argued with me that it wasn't the right style or whatever, but that one, they let it go. And one of the memorable interviews that I did was with Joe Allison, who wrote the song "With That Love Heart Die Young," which of course is my parents' greatest hit, and it was an appropriate title for his book. And this was shortly before Joe died, and I think it was 2000, I was on to Nashville, and I set up this appointment with him. At the time, he was bedridden already, he was on oxygen. So I went over to his house, and his wife brought me in and brought me to his bedroom and introduced us, and then she left to buy groceries. And he had this big king-size bed, and he was sitting on one side of it, and he had his oxygen hooked up. So I sat down on the other side of the bed, and I plopped my tape recorder in the middle of the bed to get ready to do the interview, and he says, now I can tell all my friends I was in bed with the name Captain. And I said, well, I was just thinking that this is probably the only interview that I'm going to do in bed. And he said, don't be too sure of that. You're talking to country music people. But I think the reason that Karen committed suicide was depression. This is something in all of my research that I came up with, because when he died, people thought it was so unlike him. You know, he was such a vocal, outspoken, hit-charged kind of guy. Nobody ever thought he would do something like commit suicide or give up, say he couldn't take it anymore. But during my research, both about depression, which I found out, it's not uncommon for men suffering from depression to commit suicide, and that they often try to cover up depression because it's not a macho way to feel. It's not a macho thing to be. So a lot of times the alcohol behavior, the physical abuse, and Karen was really abusive to his family, his wife, and kids. And the daredevil stuff, the attitude of Karen always picked fights with people, but then he usually talked them out of it at the end. But all those kinds of things were like he was trying to prove he was a real man and wouldn't be brought down by this depression. So, and throughout his life he had joked about committing suicide and such, but people always thought it's just Karen, he's just guilty, and nobody realized that towards the end he was giving his possessions away, he gave his dog away. It's like he was preparing for the end, but nobody saw it. But when I did all the research, then I could see the pattern there. And a lot of people, it was often said that he committed suicide because he was it being ignored, or in losing business, or the pain from health issues and that sort of thing. But I'm convinced that he suffered from depression all his life. And one of the things that I would like the book to accomplish, besides telling Darren's story, is that if anyone recognizes themselves or people they know in it, to see that where the alcoholism, the abuse, those sorts of things can lead, or the signs of depression and such. And I have had people tell me that they read the book and it was really difficult because they recognized themselves in it and they realized they needed to change their behavior. So, all in all, Darren was a great entertainer. He could be a great person when he was in a good mood. It's really sad that the alcohol took him down the way it did. But he provided us with a lot of great music, and he left us a great legacy, and we can still all enjoy his music, and I hope you all enjoy his story. When I was finishing up his biography, and I started working on the biography of Marty Robbins, and who was also in the time frame and is also in the Country Music Hall of Fame. And when we come back before the next show, I will tell you about writing Marty Robbins' biography. So thank you for being here today.
Thank you very much, Diane. How about a nice round of applause for our friend Diane?